Welcome to VOA's International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Coming up, details of history being made in the race for the White House. Our correspondent visits the front line of the Iraqi-Kurdish fight against Islamic State. Actress Helen Mirren lends support to returning art stolen by Nazis. And singer Adele has a new song and is having some fun on the road.
In Italy recently, she saw a fan filming her concert. She stopped the show and said, "I'm here live."
It's all on today's International Edition. Former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is the first female major U.S. political party presidential nominee. She met with supporters late Tuesday in Brooklyn, New York, after securing more victories in Democratic primaries.
Thanks to you, we've reached a milestone. The first time in our nation's history that a woman will be a major party's nominee. Tonight's victory is not about one person. It belongs to generations of women and men who struggled and sacrificed and made this moment possible.
Our senior national correspondent, Jim Malone, has joined us here at the Anchor Desk. Welcome, Jim.
Hi, Susan.
How is Clinton going to bring her party together?
Slowly and carefully. I couldn't resist. No, it's going to take a little while because we heard Bernie Sanders in Santa Monica last evening say, you know, we're going to keep going.
Yeah.
But also the Associated Press today is reporting he's laying off half his staff. So on one hand, we have the appearance of the campaign goes on, but I think things are going on behind the scenes. There's a big meeting coming up now on Thursday with the president and Bernie Sanders at the White House. Sanders is also meeting with Harry Reid, the Senate Democratic leader. Now, there's a Democratic primary in Washington, D.C., where we are sitting right now, in next Tuesday. And so Sanders ostensibly is doing a rally and is campaigning for that. But I think you're going to start to see the party coalesce around Clinton. And there's already calls by other Democrats for Sanders basically to give up the fight and get on board. But it won't be easy because the campaign they had was pretty divisive and was lasted much longer and was tougher than anyone imagined.
Well, in these meetings, Sanders might be told, come on now. Get behind Clinton.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Be careful there because we've already heard from Sanders supporters who are not the biggest fans of Hillary Clinton. They're going to need a little convincing to get out and vote for her in November. So they do want to be very careful not only with the candidate but with his followers and make sure that they bring them on board in a solid way. And they really want him out there, I think, campaigning on behalf of the ticket as you lead up to November as well.
Well, what about Bernie? Why is he holding on? It's apparent that Clinton got it. Why doesn't he just say, okay, I'm done, I'm going home?
Well, you know, yesterday was the 8-year anniversary of Clinton giving up, and she hung in there for a long time against Barack Obama. These things aren't always easy to wind up, and his followers were very exuberant during the campaign, and you don't just turn that off with a switch of a light, and particularly when you're trying to make sure that they're not alienated from the party. That's the whole point now, to get the party together, and I think President Obama in particular has a stake in that, because he sees Trump trying to refute everything Obama has done for the past 8 years. He wants to make sure his Democratic Party is together and that Clinton and Sanders are on the same page so they can take on Trump in the fall.
And the one thing Clinton doesn't have to deal with that Trump does is that her party is with her, while Trump's party, the Republican Party, is very divided about what he's up to.
Well, they both have their divisions at the moment, which is what we get to with Sanders. I mean, that looks more doable in some ways than perhaps repairing some of the Republican problems, which are generally of Trump's own making. There's a real credibility gap there among Republican establishment figures. They don't trust Trump. They never know when he's going to go off, which Donald Trump is going to show up on any given day. So we're going to have to watch that very closely between now and the convention.
Do you think Trump has reined in a bit?
Well, last evening when he gave his speech in suburban New York, he used a teleprompter. He usually likes to bash people who use a teleprompter. He was more restrained. But with Donald Trump, you seem to get this thing where one day he's kind of toned it down, the next day he goes off. So this is what makes Republicans nervous about Trump. Because the other thing is they don't believe he really has their best interests at heart. He's worried about Donald Trump, not so much the party, because he doesn't have any long-standing links to the Republican Party.
Do you think, just one more question, and I'll let you go because I know you're a busy man. Do you think that we might see Obama this week come out for Clinton publicly?
We might, but, you know, I keep thinking this image that's going to come out is going to be President Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Bernie Sanders all at one time.
Mm.
Let's see if that comes to pass, because at some point that would be the ultimate unifying picture for the Democratic Party.
Oh, thank you, Jim. Always appreciate your special insight.
Sure.
Joining us here at the Anchor Desk is our social media fellow, Andrew Palchevsky, and he's been looking at what's going on the web concerning the U.S. political picture. And what you got for us today, Andrew?
Well, the talk of social media is the history that was made last night with Hillary Clinton becoming the presumptive nominee, the first woman to become a major party nominee for president. Although there was some joking back and forth on social media that it was actually a day after she became the presumptive nominee, with the Associated Press and other news organizations calling it yesterday or the
day
before
yesterday. The media jumped the gun.
Yes. But for Hillary supporters, they're saying it's over. Bernie supporters on social media are saying it's not over. Of course, we've talked about in the past that Bernie Sanders tends to attract a younger base of support, a lot of people who are on social media. And so we're seeing a lot of idealism from them on social media saying, well, they don't vote in July, and the superdelegates don't vote on this until July. We still have time. He can still win the nomination. But the Hillary supporters are saying, look at the numbers. And the proof is in the numbers, and she's going to be the presumptive nominee.
And, you know, you used to tell me that Trump would tweet now and then. Has he quieted down a bit?
He's still tweeting. Actually, it's funny, as the Democratic race has fluctuated, we've seen different kind of shades of Donald Trump, as Jim's alluded to. We saw him come out and say, oh, Bernie Sanders is getting a bad rap and he's not getting the chance to compete against Hillary Clinton, maybe trying to win over some of those Bernie Sanders supporters. We actually saw some of those comments last night saying, we welcome you with open arms, borrowing something that Ted Cruz said. He said, we welcome you in open arms after Marco Rubio dropped out. But then Trump has gone and said, go crazy, Bernie. He's a socialist. So he's a lot of back and forth. It just depends on what day of the week it is, I guess, for Donald Trump, what he's saying on social media. But as Bernie Sanders, if he drops out of the race, and all accounts are that he will in sometime in the future, and Hillary Clinton will be the nominee, maybe Trump will make a play for those Bernie Sanders supporters and maybe push for that more.
And you mentioned to me earlier today that you have something else you want to share with us.
Yes. Bernie and Hillary, needless to say, are not the best of friends. But regardless, it's hashtag National Best Friends Day.
Oh.
So a really nice day. People sharing pictures of their best friends, human and animal. We're seeing some best friends from movies and books and things. We're seeing Thelma and Louise, Ron, Harry, and Hermione from the Harry Potter books. So a nice way to celebrate best friends around the world of all shapes and sizes. But like I said, between actually the three of them, I'll even throw Donald Trump in there, between Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and Donald Trump, I don't think there's a lot of friendship between the three of them.
Hopefully we'll see some soon.
Maybe.
Okay, thank you, Andrew. In the news, a police officer and two civilians are reported killed by a car bomb explosion outside a police station in Turkey near the Syrian border. Afghan authorities are disputing police reports that insurgents abducted nearly 50 passengers from a bus in Kunduz province in northern Afghanistan today. Italian police say Sudan has extradited a man suspected of being behind a migrant trafficking network to Italy. South Korea's government today declined to directly confirm the reported resumption of plutonium production in North Korea. A Nigerian rebel group has rejected the government's offer of talks to end pipeline attacks that are disrupting the country's oil production. News, feature reports, and more at our website, voanews.com.
This is Science in a Minute.
The universe is a big place, and it's getting even bigger at a faster rate than scientists had predicted. That's according to a new study led by Johns Hopkins University professor Adam Riess. The study is based on an analysis of data gathered by the Hubble Space Telescope. Adam Riess was one of three scientists who shared the 2011 Nobel Prize in Physics for their 1998 discovery that the universe is expanding at a rapid rate. Scientists have been stumped as to what might be causing such an accelerated expansion. Dark matter, dark energy, dark radiation, and perhaps a new subatomic particle are among the suspected causes. Reese and his colleagues have been working on ways to more accurately measure the rate of the expansion of the universe. He says that being able to make these measurements more precisely could provide clues to what's behind the rapid expansion. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Iraqi Kurdish fighters known as the Peshmerga have pushed their front line against Islamic State militants 23 kilometers towards the extremist stronghold of Mosul. Correspondent Sharon Bain spent 2 days on the new front line speaking with the Peshmerga. She has now returned to Erbil, and she joins us on the line. Hi, Sharon.
Hey.
What did the Peshmerga have to say about their fight?
They said actually it's a pretty fierce battle. It was a combination of the Peshmerga fighters and the coalition air strikes. We walked around the villages that they recaptured, and a lot of it was destroyed. There was a lot of rubble. And the way the Peshmerga actually did it was they did a two-front offensive. They did a direct offensive against the fighters themselves, and then they had another unit sneak around the back and sort of box them in. And they did this in a series of villages headed towards the city of Mosul. And they caught, you know, they had battles with the ISIS militants. They killed a number of them. There were a number of Peshmerga also killed, although they wouldn't discuss that particular part of it with me.
What do they believe it will take to defeat IS?
Well, actually, they were very clear about that. And they said, first of all, it would take a very unified army to be able to enter the city of Mosul, to be able to defeat them. They are not sure that the Iraqi army is unified enough to do that. The Peshmerga are definitely unified. And the Peshmerga have said that they are only going to fight in the areas that are what they call traditional Peshmerga territory. So they will retake that, like the villages that they retook were traditional Kurdish villages. So they retook that area. They don't really want to enter into the Arab land. So what they've told me and what the commander told me on this visit was it's not even so much the fight in Mosul. It's what happens afterwards. How are they going to hold the land? Who's going to be able to, you know, give enough confidence to the Sunnis who live there that they won't go back to a group like ISIS? So, you know, they're thinking very forward on this. One thing that was very interesting that they told me about this particular battle, they said that the commanders who were defending were older, the ones who were sort of entrenched in the tunnels under the village, the ones who were defending the villages. They said they've had a number of counterattacks, and the counterattacks are being led by teenagers, 15, 16, 17-year-olds, and they actually showed me photographs of the dead militants, and they are definitely all young, you know, youngish and in their teens.
Do the Peshmerga want any help from outside sources?
They do, actually, and they've been very clear about this. And again, you know, the commander sat down with me and said, I'd like to talk to you. And I said, sure, you know, let's talk. And he said, one of the things that we need the most is updated weapons. We don't, you know, he was saying we don't have any modern weapons. And they were saying that they were desperate for things to fight, especially the suicide bombers that come, the what they call vehicle-borne suicide bombers. Basically, they pack a vehicle with heavy explosives and have a suicide bomber in it, and they drive that in to a Peshmerga front line, blow it up, and then have a wave of fighters that come in afterwards. So one of the things that they're having trouble with is eradicating these vehicle-borne suicide bombers. So they're asking for better equipment. They're asking for armored vehicles in order to be able to travel in. They're asking for heavy weaponry so they can fight better. And they said they've asked for this repeatedly, and they kept asking me, to, you know, please tell the American government, or, you know, please send out the word that what we need are more and better and more updated weapons. The general that I was visiting, he told me, I have no way to verify this, but he told me he bought his own armored vehicle out of his own pocket, that they just don't have enough.
Well, I'm glad you're safe and sound back in Erbil, Sharon, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for asking me.
Coming up on International Edition, a U.S. drive to return Nazi stolen artwork. And we'll hear what singer Adele has been up to. British actress Helen Mirren has joined U.S. lawmakers' efforts to return artwork stolen by Nazis during the Holocaust to its rightful owners. Decades after Nazis looted the art, mostly from Jews, many valuable pieces remain in art galleries and private collections worldwide. Earlier this year, a group of U.S. senators introduced a bill that would ensure that claims in the United States to Nazi confiscated art are resolved fairly and quickly. Helen Mirren got interested in the subject during the making of the movie Woman in Gold, in which she portrayed a Jewish woman who fought successfully to reclaim a piece of art that was stolen from her family during the Holocaust.
It is a story that is not made possible without this incredible country, the United States of America. These are American stories, stories that capture the integrity and the power of the United States.
At a Senate hearing co-chaired by Texas Republican Ted Cruz, the Oscar-winning actress said the right thing to do in every instance is to return the art to its rightful owners.
It's a terribly sad fact that more than 70 years later, victims of the Holocaust and their families are still contemplating whether to seek restitution for what was stolen from them and lost under the most horrible of circumstances.
A lack of transparency and legal restrictions discourage many rightful owners from seeking their inheritance. One of them is Simon Goodman, testified that he had been fighting for 20 years for the return of his grandfather's collection.
Fritz Goodman was murdered in Theresienstadt in April 1944. But it was not until 1994, when my father died and I inherited his correspondence, that I became aware of my father's solitary and largely unsuccessful quest to regain his own father's dispersed collection.
One of the most common obstacles is the lapse of time between the theft and the claim of restitution. Advocates maintain there can be no statute of limitations for crimes perpetrated during the Holocaust. Agnes Perestegui is with the Commission of Art Recovery.
Just like the prosecution of genocide should never be barred by statute of limitations, in the same manner, works of art and valued property taken during a campaign of genocide should be deemed as forever tainted.
The bipartisan Holocaust Expropriated Art Recovery Act would ensure that claims to Nazi confiscated art are not unfairly barred by statutes of limitation and other procedural obstacles. This report was prepared by VOA's Latika Hoke. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
These people whipping and banging heavy ropes in rhythm across a gym floor in California. Why?
Every part of my body is shaking, my muscles. It makes me feel wonderful. I love it.
It's a roping workout class in Burbank. The rope movements, which bring to mind a Chinese ribbon dance, are said to use all the major muscle groups, improving muscular and cardiovascular endurance, but with low impact.
Like that.
Beverly Hills cardiologist Dr. Arash Baraliani.
It's really important that people know that it's not just enough to do cardio. You have to combine your cardio exercises with strength training.
Baraliani says recent studies show that short, high-grade exercise causes the body to secrete more beneficial growth hormone and less of the stress hormone, cortisol. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
Singer Adele has a new song out, and to tell us all about it is our friendly fellow from Border Crossings named Larry London. Larry, welcome to the studio.
Well, thank you, Susan. It's great to be here once again. Yes, Adele, that's an artist that everybody around the world is familiar with. Her latest album, 25, was named the best-selling album of the year, and she got the Billboard Award for being the top artist of the year, which she promptly dedicated in memory of Prince. But she's out on the road. She's been on her tour for the new album now for this past year. And she's had some interesting stories come out of her tour. Most recently, this past week, she was in Amsterdam. She sang a Spice Girls song. And she found out that Mel B of the Spice Girls was sitting in the audience. So she decided to do something fun, impromptu, sang the Spice Girls song. And Mel B was asked later what she thought. She said she was speechless. She said, Adele is absolutely amazing. By the way, the Spice Girls are celebrating their 20th anniversary this year. But Adele continues to tour and do some other things, like in Italy recently. She saw a fan filming her concert. She stopped the show and said, I'm here live. You don't need to film me. Enjoy the show. You know, some people hold up their phones video a little bit on their cell phone. This woman had a video camera. She had the whole unit.
I didn't know that was legal.
Well, I guess in Italy it might be, but Adele didn't appreciate it. I know that she forgot the words to one of her songs during a show recently. So she apologized and told the audience, oops, I messed that up. So Adele's just having fun. She's a real natural, down-to-earth person. She signed a record contract at Sony, which is more money than any British female act or any female in music history has ever made.
And how much?
$130 million.
Ooh.
That's a big contract. So she went out and celebrated and bought herself a $10 million mansion in Beverly Hills just this last week.
Well, if you have money to burn.
Why not? Burn it. Burn it my way. I'll help her burn it. And, of course, she's, with Simon Konecki, who she's been with, romantically involved with, and they have a child together named Angelo, but she's yet to wed. The two of them are just kind of living together and being happy in love and not making that official wedding commitment just yet. But the new song is off the 25 album. It's, a beautiful song. I love this song. It's a little bit happier, a little more up-tempo than some of the previous ballads that she's released. So it was about time for an up-tempo, happy song.
Well, let's test it.
It's called Send My Love.
This was all you, none of it me. You put your hands on my body and told me. You told me you were ready for the big one, for the big jump. I'd be your last love.
I can see why you like that.
Yes. Well, I like just about anything and everything that Adele does. And she's kind of on a wave right now. She's just riding the wave of popularity. And so she is Adele. She only needs one name. That's how good she is.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Larry, for stopping by. We always appreciate it.
Thank you, Susan.
If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Conference of Western Attorneys General recently hosted its Forum on Oral Trials and attracted close to 400 members of the legal profession from San Luis Potosí, Mexico. Among them were personnel from the Attorney General's Office, the Public Defender's Office, law school students and faculty, bar associations, and private attorneys. Senior litigators from the U.S., including District Attorney John Haroldson from Benton County, Oregon, and Anthony DeSilva, Deputy Attorney General, California Department of Justice, made presentations during the event that also featured a mock oral trial. The event, which took place mid-May, is part of the United States government's support for Mexican public sector legal professionals and is funded under the U.S.-Mexico Merida Initiative. The forum was inaugurated by San Luis Potosí Attorney General Federico Garza Herrera. Speaking immediately after the event, Robert Arce from the U.S. Consulate General Monterrey noted, "Oral trials will boost the efficiency, transparency, and accountability of the justice system. The legal and law enforcement professionals who came to this forum are committed to meeting their responsibilities under the new criminal justice system. The United States government is privileged to support Mexico's historic transition to a new criminal justice system, and we were delighted to welcome senior litigators from the United States to share their knowledge and experiences with the audience here today. The United States government supports the consolidation of the accusatory system in Mexico through capacity-building programs for federal and state judges, prosecutors, defense attorneys, criminal investigators, forensic experts, and other members of the judiciary, as well as for university law students and professors. Since 2008, under the Merida Initiative, the Conference of Western Attorneys General trained over 25,000 members of the legal and law enforcement communities in Mexico through study tours in countries operating under an accusatory system, seminars, and forums. The U.S. Justice Department has trained over 15,000 justice sector operators in the fundamentals of the accusatorial system. Through other programs funded under the Merida Initiative, the United States government is supporting the training of 1,600 police officers as first responder instructors, helping to equip courtrooms for oral trials and assisting forensic labs to achieve international accreditation. The United States is proud to work with Mexico to support a justice system that serves the needs and protects the rights of the Mexican people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.